Hey everybody, welcome to Sound Bombing. I created this show for people who want to experience a radical, life-changing journey through the sounds of my diverse guests. I hope that each sound you hear on this show will strengthen your faith, encourage your dreams, and challenge you to awaken the greatness within you.
Drop the bomb!
Drop the bomb!
We're gonna drop the bomb!
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
Lamar Darnell Shields.
What's up, Sound Bombing family? I wanted to say greetings to all my bombers across the country. It has been a week since I've spoken to many of you all. I am just getting off the road from California, and I'm heading to another state. I am going to New Mexico, and I'm excited about going to New Mexico. I'm going to be working with about 300 teachers focusing on wellness and healthcare, because if you don't know, I always tell people this, self-care is not selfish, so we need to take care of ourselves. So I was asked to come to New Mexico to work with about 300 teachers, going to Las Vegas, New Mexico. I know some of y'all are like, where in the ham sandwiches, Las Vegas, New Mexico? It is a place. There's no casinos there, at least I don't know anything about it, but I'm so excited about this trip because I get a chance to take my mom, my mother, Aline Shields from the great city of the Chi, who I hung out with a couple of weeks ago at the NBA All-Star Game. And let me just tell you, for those that love the NBA, if you don't love the NBA, everybody said that this was the best NBA weekend ever. And when I did the data research, I'm always putting my research hat on, that the NBA in Chicago was the highest, not only highest grossing, but it was the most expensive. And as I tell my folks from the shop, probably because we got so much crime in the city that we had to hire so many police officers. But shout out to all my family, Common, who did a great job, Shaka Khan, amazing job, to Jennifer Hudson, to Chance the Rapper. All of Chicago showed up. Kanye did, I think, a Sunday service there. So Chicago showed up. As I told my son when we got there, you're never going to see this many people from Chicago all under one roof. And then, of course, Barack Obama was in the city. And so, again, I was excited to take my son there. But Sound Bombing community, today is a very, very special day. You all know I bring on some of the dopest people across the country because I got a list of some friends who are just amazing, amazing, amazing. And one day, I was just scrolling through some messages, looking. You all know I love podcasts. I love reading. I love researching. I love to see what other people are doing. But a lot of times, we forget about some of the people that are closest to us that are doing some amazing things. And so I had the opportunity to listen to this dope podcast by my good friend, Aisha Galyon, and she is joining me in the Sound Bombing Studios. But before I bring her up, I got to introduce this sister the proper way. Aisha Galyon is a communications professional in the manufacturing industry, which entails her to navigate internal and external communications. As a former high school teacher for nearly a decade and a professor of college composition and remedial English courses, she knows the power of the written and spoken word. Prior to being an educator, Aisha was a local newspaper reporter and online newspaper producer and magazine editor for a trade publication that centered on the lighting industry. She studied journalism at the great Morgan State University and received her MA from Rutgers University in English with a concentration in women and gender studies. She has written and published several articles, interviews, and essays from No More Babies, Mama Drama, Keeping It Out of Your Life and Marriage, and Roll Call, a generational anthology of social and political Black literature and art, just to name a few. In addition to her publications, last August, she launched a new podcast called I'm Speaking Now, which explores best practices for navigating communication in a variety of scenarios. This includes public speaking, digital email texting, and everything in between. The art of communication, in her eyes, has always been near and dear to her because she believes that it is the one skill that bridges all facets and groups and societies together, collectively and individually, if done well. If not, poor communication drives us apart and diminishes opportunities for progress. Aisha also facilitates journaling workshops for wellness and an all-male journaling workshop. But before she did any of that, we were some of the dopest poets in Baltimore City, blessed the microphone every Tuesday at an amazing place called Larry Stewart's. This was the days of the Love Jones era when poetry was at its height, and we were she was a college student and I was a new teacher, just moved in from Chicago. And so that's when we thought we were about to take over the world. But the good thing now is we're still using our communication skills of writing and speaking to elevate, to encourage, and save lives of individuals. So I am so excited to welcome to the Bomb Studio my friend before children, before relationships, before all this other stuff. We were some poets just trying to make it happen. Welcome to the floor. Welcome to the show, Aisha Galyon. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, Darnell. I am just like beaming with, I don't know if you want to call it blushing. I don't know if I'm about to burst, but that was a great introduction.
Let me just tell you, we got
You're
history.
Too kind.
No, I appreciate it. Yes. We got history. When I first moved to Baltimore from Chicago, I want to say my girl was probably in her last year of college. This is crazy because I was a new teacher. Yep. You all, first of all, they were the cutest girls coming to the poetry seating, all of them, the readings,
Larry Stewart's
back. We got history. I call it BC
back
before children. We were doing our thing. Who would have ever thought that now we are grown? We have our own families that we're taking care of. Life is showing up for both of us. But what's so amazing, we're still using the gifts that the Creator gave to us, this great gift of communication.
So
what I didn't say is that the girl was a dope poet and still a dope poet, an amazing teacher. And so I am honored to have you joining me here. What's up, homegirl?
I am so happy to be just talking to you. You know that? I mean, it's just, it's been a long time. We haven't seen each other in years. I mean, with the exception of Facebook, which has allowed me to see all of the wonderful things that you're doing, your beautiful family. I mean, I do have some old Facebook pictures of you, you know, on the microphone.
You know? Oh, those blackmail pictures.
With the Paul DeRozan.
Oh yeah, man! Let's shout out to Love Jones. You know the great movie. I know we got this new film called The Photograph. I guess that's the new version of our Love Jones. But before we get into what we're doing, man, did we have a great season? Like as young folks, you know,
I'm coming.
I'm new to the city. You're on your way out the door. Life seemed so simple back then, didn't it?
We were very fortunate. And I mean, I love that you brought up that we're still kind of using those same skills that we had back then to engage people, to share with people, to be vulnerable, you know, by literally showing up, you know, and grabbing a microphone. And it was never, I don't think that the era that we grew up in, I think there was the spectrum of perhaps egocentricity. And so you had people who were just like, you know, the golden era of P. Diddy and, you know, see me, love me, I'm dressed and dripping in gold and silver. And then you had people who, you know, were dealing with the whole Kurt Cobain, Nirvana, you know, grunge scene. And then you kind of had these people in the middle that were kind of just looking both ways and taking it in and soaking it up and connecting with people on both ends of the spectrum. And I think that's where we fell in, where we were able to relate to all kinds of people. And I think we still are, so, for better or for worse.
Indeed.
And luckily, like you said, we're still thriving. We have children now, and I think that we've probably found that communicating and relating to people as parents is a whole different ball game versus getting on the mic at Larry Stewart's and, you know, having people just listen. So it's always a learning experience when it comes to, you know, doing what we do and educating people and being brave enough to kind of admit we don't know certain things, but I think we do it well. You have to stand on both, you know, sides of the fence. You have to as a good communicator and an educator.
And I concur, you know, to see that we started our writing at a very young age and we're using the gifts that the Creator gave us. I mean, back in the day, we were just on that microphone basically trying to get some dates. Let me throw out this slick line to see if I can come up here, or let me throw out this poem and see if I can get her attention, or let me be real clear. You know, be real clear. Many of us, that Larry Stewart day, it was almost like sex on a microphone. I'm like, should we be saying this type of stuff? You know, should we
it
be?
It was a big deal.
It was a big deal, but that goes without saying, the power of words. Talk to me about words. You know, why are you excited about writing words and then communication?
Oh boy, I don't even know where to begin. I think I would like to assume that my fascination with words probably started with music. And that was, you know, as a child, you know, when my father would play, you know, my parents are from St. Lucia, and so when he would play Bob Marley early in the morning when I was like 5 years old, he would do this thing, and you may have done it with your children, where you're trying to mouth the lyrics and like get your kid to understand the narrative or the story behind the song. And of course, you know, Bob Marley had a lot of heavy messaging behind his music. So I would kind of catch on to understanding that there was always a message usually behind words that we heard, even if it were in a song that perhaps was meant to entertain you. And then I think, you know, being read things like the Arabian Nights and just being told stories at bedtime, and I don't know, somewhere along the way. And then also my dad had a bookstore, you know, when I was younger. So I would be sitting in that bookstore and reading, just flipping through everything. And I think that just the importance of being able to express oneself, you know, my parents were immigrants. And so not only did they come to America together, but they're from St. Lucia. And I think the importance of being able to speak clearly and to be understood and to also understand what people are truly conveying to you, because sometimes people's words will go over your head at your expense, and, you know, opportunities are missed because of this, misunderstandings and conflict occur because of this. I think I just grew up in a family where you had to be clear about what you understood people were conveying and what you wanted people to understand you were saying to them, because there was too much to be lost and so much to be gained if you did it right or if you did it wrong. So I think that's where it all comes from in life, meaningful to me.
Yeah, and I believe words are singularly the most powerful force available to humanity, but I think that we sort of take words for granted. I mean, when you think about what's happening right mm-hmm. here, right now, in the public sector when it comes to politics and things of that nature, yeah. You get these individuals who grab the microphone, and I'm talking politicians, I'm sorry, I'm talking entertainers, and I don't think that they understand how powerful their words are. I just think about what just took place with Kobe Bryant. Now, I was flying to California mm-hmm. the same day Kobe died, Aisha, I was flying to California at the same time, flew into the second LA airport. And of course, then I'm seeing all, you know, what's taking place there. And then I look at the situation with Gayle King in an interview, and then Snoop came out, and then Snoop's mom, Snoop had to talk to his mother, and he had to take those words back. You know, one thing we teach our kids, the biggest lie that we teach our kids, was sticks and stones may break our bones, but words or names will never hurt you. And we know words are powerful. We know, again, I was being facetious about the conversation that Larry Stewart on the microphones and being seductive, but those words were powerful. We did say certain things to get types of feelings and emotions. Can you talk to me about you know, coaching people through as people are writing articles and giving speeches, just to be more mindful about their words usage. And again, I'm bringing up the Snoop situation because then he had to go back and then he had to apologize to Gayle King, which I want to honor and thank him as a man, in particular, a man of color, to say I was wrong. I was passionate, but I was hurt, and you hurt one of my heroes.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And the way that you just expressed it, I think that would have been a wonderful way for him to have expressed it, because like you mentioned, there was a lot of cleaning up. You know, when you drop a champagne glass, you got to mop that floor. You can't just sweep it up with a little, dry broom. And I think he's still kind of mopping that up. And in the meantime, yes, Gayle suffered some consequences as well. But that's a whole different conversation, I suppose, a whole different episode for sound bombing. But going back to your question relative to the importance of, word choice and people curating their messages so that the emotional and psychological response is in their favor, it is imperative, especially depending on the stakes, at hand. So, for example, in manufacturing, I happen to work in plastics manufacturing. And if we're aware of how our planet is moving forward in terms of sustainability, and just not on, let's talk superficiality, because to a degree, sustainability has become very marketable. There are certain businesses and brands that are presenting themselves as supporting sustainably, and responsibly sourced items. That may be doing a bit of greenwashing. And so it's very important that even if there is a bandwagon you want to be affiliated with, that the words that your brand uses, or that if you are, let's say, a CEO or spokesperson for that company, that you do not glom onto the trend that overtly shows that there's not a genuine dedication to sustainability, for example, or a dedication to helping artisans in so-called third world countries. There are certain words and a lexicon that I think that exists out there for a variety of markets that we know we can tap into to gain some attention. But if overused, then it goes the wrong way. And you can easily be shown to be disingenuous, which is really inauthentic. So people like me, what I deem is important is that, one, that there's some authenticity behind your messaging, that there's a genuine interest in what you're expounding upon, whether it's in a one-on-one conversation, like with you and me, if we're talking, I'm hoping that everything that you say is coming from a genuine place and is not self-serving. And it should be the same way with people who are in positions that require, or that just even by mere whim allow people to pay attention to them. So whether that's a teacher in front of students, whether that's the principal in front of teachers, whether that's the superintendent in front of everybody, in the city, we have to be very genuine. We don't have to be, but I would hope that we are genuine and authentic, and that we're not pulling from a lexicon of superficial, vacuous language in order to gain power.
Yeah, I just want the listeners today and to understand that words have energy and power, with the ability to help, heal, hinder, hurt, harm, humiliate, humble, all of the H's that I can think of. And when I thought about bringing somebody on after listening to some of your podcasts and reading some of your writing, I thought that you were just a great person to actually do that.
Thank you.
So when you're sitting down, let's just say you're working with a client and you're helping them to craft a message. They want to create this message. They want to write this article. Again, they can't go back and explain, hey, I meant to say this, I meant to say that. What are some of the steps that you would take a person through, or some exercises that you can share with our listeners?
Okay. So I'll give you an example. I write press releases for breaking news, you know, in the company, and I've written press releases on behalf of myself or, you know, maybe a friend. And one thing that you have to know, you have to be aware as a person who kind of is that bridge between the client or the speaker's message and their audience, you have to know the tendencies and the intent of the speaker or the client. So if there's an outcome that that client wants, or there is a presentation of that brand that that client wants, then you have to be already aware of it. And then you have to already know some of the potholes that are on that road. So you have to know what can possibly go wrong relative to when you put out a press release and a statement, what are some of the things that this person may have to answer, you know, questions that are difficult, that they have to already be prepared to answer and answer in a way that's genuine and believable. So I have to know who I am helping, in essence. I cannot do something like deliver a message for an individual or a company or a brand that I'm not really too familiar with, or my level of familiarity is surface level, because that endangers my, you know, my reputation as a communications professional. It also really puts them at risk for embarrassing themselves or ruining the reputation that they have in a certain marketplace. I think that, one, I have to know and understand the intent of what it is, the result that the client wants, right? So once I know that, then I'm able to say, okay, let me share this news in a way that's positive, but that also strikes curiosity. Because one of the things that creates fluid communication and engagement is that the person who's reading the press release or listening to the message becomes curious. And then you have kind of this cyclical flow of communication and questioning and answering. And hopefully, if the person that sends out the message is prepared well, they'll be able to answer whatever question a reporter or an editor or a parent at a, you know, Board of Education meeting will ask them. So it's all about being prepared to share a consistent message, but also being okay being held accountable too, because people are going to have questions when you share messages and your own insight. I think that's where a lot of my preparation takes place, right? Creating consistent messaging.
Well, speaking of consistent messaging, you and I both have a son, and yes. I know that you do a series for men called the Blueprint Series. And speaking of messages and speaking of communication, mm-hmm. one of the things that I've been told as a man, I've heard quite time and time again, that men aren't great communicators. Can you talk to mm-hmm. me about your series, the Blueprint Series for Men? What is that about? Yeah. And what are some things that you you've learned as a woman about men that you just didn't know, even though your dad was in your life, some things that just might have gone out the window?
Okay, so the Blueprint Series, that is a journaling workshop that, because, you know, I was an educator, and so I was an educator of language arts, so English, journalism, creative writing, British, world literature, all of those things. And over the years, I understood how very liberating the ability to read and understand and to find catharsis through writing was, right? By studying other, you know, the great writers, and also by practicing the craft myself. And I've always journaled. So that was something that was really intrinsic for me. I came about with the Blueprint Series probably around the time of there was some police brutality taking place, and we had a gentleman who was murdered. I cannot remember. His name escapes me now. But
you know what's sad? There's so many we can't even think of. I mean, know. You could be thinking locally, nationally, in your own backyard. That's unfortunate.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. No, you're right. You're right. Because I referenced his name, and I can't think of it right now, but he was the one who was trying to show the officer his gun permit. And his girlfriend ended up live Facebook live feeding or streaming her boyfriend. He was in the passenger seat, and it was a bloody white T-shirt, and her daughter was in the back seat. I can't remember his name, but I was very, very upset. As you can see, I probably psychologically blocked the man's name from my, from my easily accessible memory because of how traumatic it was. And I recall feeling that men were being taken away, sometimes by no fault of their own, sometimes via circumstance, the way that they grew up. And journals were a form of a historical narrative that Black men in particularly were not really raised to keep. And my question became, how many of us have access to our grandfather's journals? And I would ask people this, and many of them, well, really all of them, let me be very real, said, no, I don't have it. My grandfather didn't keep a journal. And I thought of that murdered young man and the thoughts. He was a food service worker, that I do remember. You know, the thoughts, the aspirations, the dreams that he may have had that we will never have access to, because we don't have a journal from him. We don't have a blueprint. And I think that many of our forefathers, I mean, by law, it was illegal for them to read in America under, the laws of slavery in this country. And so naturally, keeping a journal just wasn't something that was acceptable. But if you look at a lot of other cultures and the paternal figures throughout time, how many journals of traveling, of innovation, of engineering, of real estate, and just planning in general, political, can we find journals of? How many movies about other people's cultures have been created based on mere journals and, so-called diaries? And I just thought that Black men, it was time for them to create a, I would say, I wouldn't think of it as a diary in terms of just emoting, on paper, but even via for operational purposes, right? So if you have a business, writing down maybe standard operating procedures as they come to your head, or your plan for creating these things, so that when you pass on, these diamonds that you've buffed into, gleaming fortune, and I say that figuratively and literally, are accessible. They're accessible. And then also, for emotional reasons and catharsis, I think it's important for Black men to be able to think within themselves and to themselves and not necessarily act it out, because sometimes that acting out can be premature, or some of the words that are used when they express certain things might hurt other people. And truly, it's not just with Black men, it's with anyone. And that's why I think journaling anchors ourselves to ourselves, if that makes any sense. Because that's, we have to start our relationships with other people, I think, are more authentic and more sustainable when we know ourselves best.
So the person that you're talking about is Philando Castile, who was pulled over with his girlfriend in Minnesota. And actually, the police officer was acquitted during that case when, for those that don't remember that case, Philando Castile was shot and killed by a Minnesota officer. And then acquitted, his girlfriend was in the car and recorded all of this. But let's backtrack for a second. What are some things that you've learned about men that just really, really just, you just didn't know until you started working with them?
Well, I can tell you that deciding that I wanted to do a journaling workshop with men, I was scared to do that. I mean,
why were you afraid? Tell us why. Why?
Well, I felt that it was not my place necessarily. I felt that I could be perceived, there could be a misperception about me. Who's this woman who thinks she's going to guide these men in writing in journals, and that maybe a man should do it instead. But then I thought, well, you've taught young men in college and in high school. Why is this so different? You know, is it because you're not in a school, you know, in an actual school building? You have the skill set to do this. Why not be courageous enough to at least offer it and then see what happens? And I'm going to tell you, it was like pulling teeth. It was like pulling teeth because I just don't think it is a concept that many men, especially Black men, especially brothers who have, you know, no experience with seeing their dads, you know, write in a journal or pass down, or even their mom, right? In our community, this concept of historicizing ourselves and elevating our own thought processes, it is not traditional, you know, in some parts or subcultures within our community. And so it was new for me. It was new for a lot of men. I did have people who came. I had 7 attendees, which were journaling workshops. You probably want to have about a good 15 in order to reach everyone. But I learned that it's something that needs to continue happening. So I do plan on giving another Blueprint Series workshop. Would I welcome a male facilitator, a male co-facilitator? I'm thinking about that because I do think that it's important for men to also see another man leading something like this. You know, I'm not Iyanla Van Zandt. You know, like, maybe she can walk into a room and have men, you know, believe her. But I feel like this is something that is new. And for me to bring it to the people on a ground level, I think I do need help when it comes to leading an all-men journaling workshop. But I learned that it's necessary. Part of mental health, and Black men need it.
When did So I knew you grew up around a bookstore, and you grew up with the Caribbean roots, and a lot of music, a lot of conversation, a lot of talking. When did you first realize that you wanted to be a writer? Was it hanging around a bookstore? Was it just I need to develop some time because my dad is working all day, so I need to read all these books. I could be at home watching the cartoons.
I think that it's just something that I had within me all of my life, honestly, and I don't think I ever decided it. I think that it was something that I always did when I was in college. I wrote for, you know, a spokesman every now and then. I mean, I was a journalism major. So I knew that the way that we processed stories and narrative was engaging for me, and I loved to be the deliverer of those things. I think after graduating, you know, the art of writing short stories was something that I always found pleasure in doing. But the first time, and this is crazy because I don't talk about this, but the first time that I decided to write a book was when I was married. And and it's all because you're my homie.
We got history, girl. I knew you before all that stuff.
Man, my ex-husband, because I'm not, no longer married, my ex-husband came to the marriage with children from a prior relationship. And it was very difficult for me for many other reasons that would require yet another podcast with you, another episode. Nevertheless, I said, no, I need to write a guide for stepmothers. And so I said, okay, I'm going to write a guide for wives who are dealing with crazy baby mamas. Now, you have to forgive me because I was 25 at the time. And so the title of the book was No More Babies Mama Drama, Keeping It Out of Your Life and Marriage.
Hold up, I love that. Sounds like a Tyler Perry special. I mean, we need to reach out to him.
Oh, my God. Crazy. You know, I think I was on maternity leave, something I just had a first child, and I said, well, and I was watching Oprah. I said, Oprah's up here living her life and doing this. Well, I need to write this book and stop watching Oprah. So I wrote this book. I, you know, just kind of banged this thing out. And because I'm a good writer, structurally, it was great. The whole publishing process, you know, you got to write those queries, send those queries out, you get all these rejections. And so I ended up self-publishing it. But then somehow, I think Kensington, I can't remember remember right now how they got word of it. And then they decided they wanted to pick it up. And so then it got picked up by Kensington. And the next thing you know, it was all across the country. Now, mind you, I was 25. You know what I mean? And I felt like, you know, this person that my ex-husband had children with was this demon. And she definitely had some issues. But in retrospect, now that I'm in my 40s, and now that I am divorced, and I understand family dynamics much better, I understand that it takes a little bit of everyone involved to make things fair. So that's why I don't talk about that book. Because I was going in. I was mad. And that was my first, you know, that was my first foray into, like, being published and picked up by a publisher. And honestly, the podcast I'm speaking now, that came about because I wanted to write a book, and I'm working on it, about communication, right? And I wanted to anchor it to some other mode of engagement for audiences that would be paired very well with the book on communication. But yeah, that was in 1990. Maybe, no, that was in 2000. I'm sorry. That was in 2005, I think, that book, No More Babies, Mama Trauma, came out.
Well, it's interesting. You bring up.
I don't talk about it no more.
No, you bring up a really, really good point about what I love about storytelling. You know, through stories, we share passions, fears, sadness, hardships, and joys, and we find common ground with other people so that we can connect and communicate with them. And your message mm-hmm. about this whole baby mama drama is a message that could be somewhat universal, because stories are universal. They convey meaning and purpose that help us understand ourselves better and find a commonality with others. And what happens is, what I'm hearing you is, you matured in your writing and what was going on, but that stuff was real. And so out of that, you know, you then, you know, out of that pain and out of those stories, you now have created, you sort of referenced it a little bit, you created the Speaking Now podcast. It's sort of what really drove me back to you outside of your workout videos. That's a whole nother, your workout photos. I'm like, I'm like, my girl is working it out, Sister Aisha. I see you talking to her. No, you are doing it. The fact that you get up every morning, the fact that you show those images and show those pictures, that again, I know as Tupac, I got my name from mama, got my game from mama. I've been around women my whole life. So I know the challenge of images or body images and size. And of course, we're not built the way we were the Larry Stewart days with the spoken word poetry, but you are accepting all of that. And so I was following you through that. And then I started following you through your Speaking Now podcast that you reference, and share with our audience about that, the origin again, and then also the name, why call it Speaking Now podcast?
Yes. So I will tell you, I thought about different titles for the podcast. Let me rewind. It was actually the book, because my concept for messaging was originally, I want to write this book about communication. And so I went through tons of titles for what the book's name should be. And I came up with I'm Speaking Now. Now, the reason that I chose those three words really was that many people feel as if they're not being listened to, right? And then many people feel as if they don't know how to show up and command an audience. So there are people who feel as if perhaps they don't have the skill set to speak in certain tones, or to assert themselves, or to perhaps listen very well, because speaking, as I can see you're very good at doing, also involves listening, which you are also very good at doing as well.
Some people might not agree with that, that might live in my household or have the same last name as me, but keep going.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
But I like that you're really, really making me feel good, but keep going.
I'll leave that one alone. But yes, you know, so I'm Speaking Now is really a statement of assertion. It's a statement of assertion, not of aggression. So it's not shut up now, I'm speaking. You know, it's I'm speaking now. So it is really a statement that says I'm here, I'm present, and I have the right to be listened to. You may not want to listen to me, but I'm aware that I have the right to be heard. Right? We can't control whether or not people listen to us, though. So that's part of my messaging. We can't control that, but we can somewhat manipulate and massage and make it easier for people to hear what we're saying if we communicate using best practices. So then that's the name of the podcast, because that will be the name of the book when I finish it.
Well, we want people to check you out, because I think that the podcast is amazing. Our listeners get in contact with you and find out more information about Ms. Galyon?
Well, they can certainly go to my website, right, if you want to learn more about the Blueprint series or any of the journaling workshops that I do for women and children. If you want to find out more about the podcast, all of this stuff. Now, the No More Baby Mama Drama book, that ain't on there. I mean, you can Google that, but you'll find it. They still selling it on, Amazon or whatever. But no, that's not on there. But everything else is on there. So my website is AyeshaJGalyon.com. So that's AyeshaJ, the letter J, because my middle initial is J, and Galyon, GALLION.com. I'm Speaking Now is also, I've got an Instagram page for it. So, you can certainly contact me or learn what shows are coming up next by going to I Am Speaking Now on Instagram. And then if you just type in I'm Speaking Now into your Apple podcast search bar or Spotify, then, or my name, Ayesha Galyon, then the podcast will come up. Or if you just Google Ayesha Galyon, I'm Speaking Now, you'll be able to find links to the podcast through various streaming services.
What are some exercises that my listeners can do on their own to really help with their writing and their speaking?
Well, let's start with writing. You have to read other writers. You have to. That is something that, I did share earlier in our conversation that it's always been within me to write. But we both know that I said earlier my father had a bookstore. So I had to read. This is not something where, for instance, a person who sings, I believe, now maybe I'm wrong, but I believe it's because they've heard other melodies presented. They've heard other forms of singing. There's something that they connected to that sparked that skill, and then they went and honed that skill. Same with writing. You have to read other authors. You have to learn the genres. If you want to write, say, a hero narrative, you have to study, and I hate to be technical, but you have to study the archetypes that are within that genre so that you are not overdoing it, or perhaps subconsciously rewriting some old trope that we've seen 50,000 times or that we've read 50,000 times. So you have to study the science of writing, and then you also have to learn to enjoy it and also to become a critic of it. Relative to speaking, that to me is just like writing is something that you have to listen to other people speak. You have to learn what it feels like when you listen to someone. That is a practiced art, the art of listening. Because, and I'm sure you've experienced this, and members of your listening audience, of Sound Bombing listening audience, they've tried to express something, they're cut off in the middle of what they're saying, and then they have to re-explain or go back to the original point because the person who's interrupted them is now going off on another tangent that is irrelevant to the original point that the speaker is trying to make. Not listening wastes everyone's time. So you have to learn how to, even if you're excited, I've done it before, cutting people off because I'm excited, in the middle of their sentences. You have to kind of take a deep breath, learn how to listen, and really engage that person. Try to feel their excitement. Try to feel their sadness or their disappointment or whatever it is that they're emoting through what they're sharing with you. And then try to reflect that you have processed it. That's very different than just replying, impulsively. That doesn't leave the other person with a sense of satisfaction that they've been heard. So that's a little bit about listening. And then relative to speaking, you know, a good practice is listening to yourself. We all, a lot of us, you've got cell phones, record yourself talking about something that you're passionate about. Play it back. See how many times you say, see if you like the way that your voice sounds. Is your tone assertive? Do you whisper? Can you barely hear yourself? Right, study yourself. It's quite entertaining and enlightening, in my opinion.
Well, speaking of enlightening, this is my favorite part of the show. It is called the Super Bomb Questions. And you know, bomb is a healing. And this is a part of the show where I ask these rapid fire questions. So you got to get really, really prepared. And I never share the questions ahead of time. I'm going to ask you a question and I need the first response that comes to your head. So Aisha Galyon, are you ready for this? This is the first one is really easy. So here we go. What is your favorite word?
Love.
What is your favorite Bible or Quran verse or spiritual book that you read? Verse. Give me a favorite verse.
Well, it would be one of the surahs, the shorter surahs, Surah An-Nas in the Quran. And that is just about asking God to protect you from the darkness of mankind.
What's your superpower?
Listening.
What's your spirit animal?
Lion.
What moves you to tears?
Vulnerability.
What moves you to joy?
Laughter.
What do you wish you had more time to do?
Enjoy sunshine.
What dead person would you most like to meet or get advice from?
Toni Morrison.
What book or books have you given most as a gift and why?
I don't really give books as a gift.
You're just hoarding books, huh, from your father's store.
I just hoard them for myself. That's terrible.
All right. So what's the most worthwhile investment that you've ever made?
Probably my education.
If you were in the Miss America talent competition, what would your talent be?
I'd have to do a public speaking exercise. I'd probably have to give a speech.
Well, we're going to close out right there. Aisha Galyon, I want to thank you for joining me in the Bomb Shelter. As I was sitting here listening to you talk, I'm just thinking the years and years and years. We've been knowing each other for a very long time, and I am honored to call you a friend. I don't need to talk to you or see you every day.
When
we pick up the phone, it's just like the memories come back. I want to thank all my producer for allowing me to be in the studio and my music team, Supremacy, for our theme music, and for all of you for listening. And as always, believe that something powerful is about to happen, and some people miss the message because they're too busy looking for the mess. Thanks for tuning in, and do something for someone other than yourself today. You've been listening to Sound Bombing. Peace.